Welcome to PASIG Practice Pearls, where performing arts physical therapists share their expertise and discuss some of the unique needs of keeping artists healthy.
Hello, and thank you for joining me for this exciting two-part episode on the PASIG Practice Pearls podcast. This is part two of PAPT Fellowships, What's in the Box? My name is Isabella Skangamore, and I am an orthopedic physical therapy resident. I will be joined in this episode by representatives from Columbia University, Irving Medical Center, Westside Dance Physical Therapy Performing Arts Fellowship, and Johns Hopkins Hospital Performing Arts Fellowship. If you missed part one, where we spoke with Harkness Center for Dance Injuries Postgraduate Performing Arts Physical Therapy Fellowship Program and the Performing Arts Fellowship at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center, you can find that and all previous episodes on the PASIG page of the AOPT website. Please enjoy. Today, I'm joined by Laurel from Columbia and Andrea and Monique from Johns Hopkins. Dr. Laurel Daniels-Abrazizi is an Associate Professor of Rehabilitation and Regenerative Medicine in the Programs in Physical Therapy at Columbia University. She serves as the Director of the Westside Dance Physical Therapy, Columbia University Irving Medical Center Performing Arts Fellowship Program, partnering with Marika Molnar, founder and owner of WSDPT. At Columbia, she leads the Columbia Dance Research Team, working with DPT students on a series of dance research projects. Dr. Abrazizi also serves as the president of the Performing Arts Special Interest Group within the APTA's Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy. Andrea Lassner is currently a physical therapist and performing arts clinical specialist for the Johns Hopkins Hospital and clinical manager of the Johns Hopkins Rehabilitation Network Clinic at the Peabody Institute. In addition to her clinical and leadership responsibilities, she is the director of the Johns Hopkins Performing Arts Fellowship, directing and mentoring a post-professional education program focused on clinical excellence, rehabilitation of performing arts-related injuries, and wellness. Dr. Lassner is adjunct faculty at Towson University and at the Peabody Institute, where she is lead instructor of coursework to collegiate undergraduates and coordinates community outreach screenings and workshops. Dr. Lassner presents annually at state, regional, national, and international conferences and has been co-author on several dance medicine research studies. She is practice chair for the American Physical Therapy Association Performing Arts Special Interest Group, which she has been a leader on the committee since 2015. Monique DeLuca is a doctor of physical therapy and board-certified orthopedic specialist. She has completed an orthopedic residency through Cayuga Medical Center in Ithaca, New York, and a performing arts fellowship through Johns Hopkins Medicine. She is currently working as a level 2 performing arts physical therapist for Johns Hopkins Rehabilitation Network in Columbia, Maryland. She also provides backstage physical therapy for the Ballet Theater of Maryland. She has collaborated and presented on various performing arts research initiatives at annual conferences for both the Performing Arts Medical Association and the International Association of Dance Medicine and Science. She is a member of the APTA Performing Arts Special Interest Group and the International Association of Dance Medicine and Science.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
So excited to be here.
Thank you. Thanks so much for joining me. So jumping right into the questions, Laurel, going to you first. Why was Performing Arts Fellowships formed? And what's the objective with developing these programs?
Well, physical therapy for performing artists, which includes dancers, musicians, vocalists, gymnasts, ice skaters, circus performers, and actors, has long been recognized as a subspecialty practice area within orthopedic and sports physical therapy. I remember attending my first Performing Arts Special Interest Group event at an APTA meeting over 25 years ago. So this is not new to have a subspecialty area of practice. It's really about formalizing the education. Back in 2000, Jennifer Gamboa led a practice analysis and developed a description of specialty practice for performing arts PT. And since then, there's been a growing need, particularly from new physical therapists to the field, looking for more formal and structured educational experiences to advance their knowledge and skills in performing arts. So back in 2015, the PASIG revalidated the practice analysis, which led to the formation of the description of fellowship practice and these newer fellowship programs that we're talking about today.
Awesome. It's been a really cool journey for performing arts in performing arts medicine and physical therapy. Now that it has been recognized as an area of special interest and, you know, getting that training as a fellowship program, Laurel and Andrea, what characteristics might differentiate one fellowship from another when deciding what program is right for you?
Do you want to start, Andrea?
Sure. Yeah. So with the description of fellowship practice, each of the fellowships accredited kind of follow the structure of what didactic and mentorship hours are needed. But in terms of content, we're all to give, you know, everything from dance medicine to instrumentalist to vocalist to figure skating. But where each of the fellowships might be geographically oriented and their collaborations within the communities might differ. For example, you know, if you're in New York City versus in Baltimore City, the geographical, you know, nature of having maybe professional dance companies is slightly different, but we do have our freelance dancers, but we have also a wide variety of instrumentalists with, you know, being immersed at Peabody Conservatory. Laurel probably can talk to, you know, how hers might differ, but, you know, we really try to also partner with all of the fellowships as well on, you know, if there's areas where we might not have as much immersive experience for the fellow, there's ways that we can still be able to provide that versus through, you know, in-person experiences of didactic mentorship, or also then partnering with our other fellowships where they might be a little bit more well-versed or have an expert faculty member that is willing to kind of share within the fellowships combined.
I'm so glad you said that, Andrea, because even though the question is about the characteristics that might differentiate the different fellowship programs, I think, you know, I wear two hats. One is, you know, director of the Columbia Westside Dance Fellowship, but also as president of POSIG, we want all of the fellowships to be successful. We all work together as directors to ensure the success of all the fellowships. We all collaborate on, you know, recruitment, on curriculum, on additional resources that might be provided through the POSIG that could advance the experience of all fellows. We really want to work on building communities of practice with the fellows in all the different programs so they can pull together for things like, you know, case studies or, you know, journal clubs and things like that. So at the heart, we want them all to have really strong foundation building from that DFP. But as Andrea said, you know, depending on your local relationships, you know, for example, in New York, there are different arts in New York than might be in Ohio or in a different location. Westside Dance PT has a relationship with New York City Ballet and School of American Ballet. So even though our fellow will get to work with actors and tap dancers and, you know, other artists, without question, the primary focus is ballet dancers for our fellowship. Whereas another, you know, fellowship may have more Broadway performers. So those are some things that might distinguish fellowships, is your access to different populations. Also, this is true for residencies and fellowships. You can either be predominantly a clinic setting, predominantly an academic setting, or a hybrid relationship between an academic and clinical partnership, which ours is a combo. So our fellow spends 4 days in the clinic and working with New York City Ballet and 1 day at Columbia. And so that may change your access to, for example, DPT students. So if you're interested in teaching or interested in research, there might be different opportunities afforded depending on which fellowship you are a part of in terms of things like the non-clinical aspects of your experience. And then the last thing I would add is just the people. You know, you can see different backgrounds of the available mentors and where their expertise lies in terms of who you might want to work with and get mentorship from by evaluating the different programs that are out there.
Awesome. So it sounds like there's some different opportunities at an institutional level, depending on what program you go to. What other support or opportunities come from your different institutions? I know you mentioned that, like, with Columbia, you do one day at Columbia and 4 days at Westside Dance. Does John Hopkins have anything similar to that?
So with being collaborative with Peabody Institute, which is the oldest conservatory in the United States, that conservatory actually houses dance musicians, vocalists, and composition majors. So it's really giving light to more of the elite collegiate performing artists. So that's where there's a lot of immersive chances to work in a workshop format, where we've done research looking at musculoskeletal prevalence of injury with our musicians. So I would say because of our international caliber at Johns Hopkins and kind of what we stand for, we do have that availability to do unique research, but also the amount of technology that we have as well kind of stands alone with doing creative research projects and collaborating with outside brands and vendors that might be interested in working with technologies with this unique patient population. And there's just many opportunities as well if the fellow comes in and is interested in maybe a certain aspect of performing arts, where we're willing to kind of provide that unique experience for them. It's not so much of make your own fellowship, but it's really facilitating the learning of the fellow so that they're coming out of the experience with sound skills, but also being an active contributor to the performing arts community.
Yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead, Laurel.
We see that as a real goal for all of our fellows too, to make sure that they are positioned to be leaders in the performing arts world later on as educators, as researchers, as leaders within POSIG or wherever they may want to practice. And so our relationship to Columbia helps with research for sure, in terms of, you know, an IRB proposal, for example, or any kind of training and research methods is a strength. And certainly any kind of support around teaching or developing teaching skills, and then access to the DPT students that can be as subjects of teaching or also collaborators on research projects, because we have quite a large number of people that also want to do research, but they'll be at the DPT level helping the fellows. So
that helps segue nicely into my next question, because there's a lot of talk about where we want people, you guys want people to be at the end of the fellowship. So what are the expectations and goals formed within the program to help that fellow get there, to get to that graduate level? And what is the level of expertise they have upon graduation? I know, Andrea, you just kind of spoke about that it's kind of, for your program, you can kind of find your own a little bit. Is that correct?
Yeah, but of course you have to fulfill just the baseline rubrics of fulfilling didactic hours, 150 hours, 100 hours of mentorship. So that's really where we always make sure we hit those, but then you might have a live patient exam where you're being able to, you know, have someone look into the way that you're treating to make sure that you are passing, you know, demonstrating competent understanding of differential diagnosis, demonstrating psychomotor skills such as proper movement assessments, communicating with the artist and the performing arts team depending on the environment that they're in, and just while applying appropriate interventions that are specific to performing arts versus kind of the maybe general orthopedic population. So there's that aspect, but also with fellowship, which makes residency a little bit different, is we do tie a research, you know, scholarly work to be working towards, whether it is presenting at a national level, international level, or, you know, all of our fellows are to do IRB training initially to be a primary investigator, whether it's on a current interest of theirs, or if it's to be a co-investigator on a, you know, maybe a study that we're in the middle of that they kind of pick up and carry through to eventually be able to provide another kind of manuscript within to create this, you know, clinically informed evidence-based practice that we're moving towards of, you know, having more performing arts medicine literature out there and really make it robust. So that's kind of what we're looking for in terms of benchmarks to make sure the fellow is hitting and passing and graduating to be this great contributor to the community.
I'll also add, in addition to teaching benchmarks and research benchmarks, within the description of fellowship practice, there's a list of primary health conditions and certain populations that the fellows all need to have exposure to. If they don't get clinical exposure, it needs to be met in some other way, either through some didactic experience or research experience. But they will be evaluated not just on their orthopedic clinical skills, but those advanced practice skills that you would need to work with this unique population. So, you know, knowledge of the biomechanics of the artist, and, you know, whatever's involved in their art form, you know, knowledge about, you know, terminology and equipment, point shoes, or, you know, the boot on a skate. You know, there are different things that people may need to learn and be familiar with to work with artists in a competent manner. So we will have didactic benchmarks in terms of exams or feedback on presentations, but then also clinical benchmarks in terms of their advanced practice skills.
I like how you broke that apart a little bit more, made it a little bit more specific. With the clinical skills, are those usually done during a mentoring session? And what do the mentoring sessions typically look like? What are the goals of those and how are they structured?
Well, with both residency and fellowship experiences, the heart is mentoring. Really, that is what it's all about. It shouldn't be confused with clinical, you know, instructors in an entry-level DPT program. It's not the same as, you know, having a clinical supervisor just in a regular job. It's really, you know, hands-on, one-on-one development of your advanced practice skills. So mentoring begins before working with the patient. So prepping, talking about your goals and what you want to get out of the session, maybe asking the mentor questions or things that you're thinking about in advance of working with the patient, then they're actually working with you with the patient. And in a fellowship, at least half of your mentoring hours need to be with the fellow leading the patient care. So it's not just observing, you know, a master clinician and watching and, you know, soaking in their wisdom, although that happens too, but you actually leading the care as a fellow and getting feedback from the mentor on maybe some nuances and things to consider that are unique to the performing artist that weren't part of your practice just being a clinical specialist in orthopedics or sports. And then debriefing after that mentoring session when the patient's not there about things that you could do differently, what else would you want to add? And really, you know, trying to grow in a collaborative way. It really is, there's time set aside every week for direct one-on-one mentoring, but it's really happening all the time throughout the fellowship. It's the heart of the experience. I know we talked a lot about, you know, research and teaching and some of these co-curricular experiences, but really the clinical practice and the mentoring should be the heart of any fellowship program.
Yeah, I agree. You know, that's really where applicants that are looking for fellowship are most likely looking for that mentorship of having that immersive experience with a clinical expert in this field to be able to learn, not just kind of a distance learning, but it's an actual in-person learning. And like Laura was talking about, kind of the pre-mentor session and then the recap afterwards, really that in-person and it's with the patient present it's really to me to be collaborative. It's not meant to be looked down upon to the fellow or make the patient feel kind of like, why is this person watching, right? Sometimes there is that kind of patient mentor experience that we want to make sure everyone feels like the patient is still number one and that they're not just a guinea pig. So it really is collaborative and they almost get a 2-for-1 deal and the patient feels kind of good, especially from the performing arts standpoint. You know, they feel, wow, I have all this attention, but it really also gives more light to the mentor watching the fellow of where they're at in those benchmarks too. If there's carryover and understanding of the skills didactically that they're learning and that they're practicing and that they're able to implement them in an efficient and effective way.
Awesome. You just made me chuckle because during my residency mentoring this week, I had a patient say, oh, I'm getting a 2-for-1 deal. Hopefully you don't bill me twice. So it's just funny. I've heard sentiment twice this week.
That's awesome. But yeah, a lot of people are like intimidated or they can really enjoy that they have two therapists working with them.
Yeah, it's mentoring is a lot of fun. And that's at the orthopedic level. So I would imagine once it's in that higher subspecialty level that it's even more fun. All right, Monique. So you've had the experience of doing both a residency program and a fellowship. Can you talk a little bit about how your experiences have been different and why someone who did a residency might want to consider doing a fellowship?
Yeah, of course. So before I say how they're different, I will say they are similar, right? So the structure in terms of the formatting for me, I think that was something I really actually enjoyed. Like I'm someone who likes structure. I like that kind of setup. And being that I had such a great experience with the orthopedic residency, I kind of knew that that was a system that worked well for me, which is why I was really interested in the fellowship. But in the ways that they're different is that I think, as Laurel and Andrea kind of explained, that, you know, fellowship is then the next step after that. You know, orthopedic is laying down like the residency is laying down that orthopedic knowledge that you're going to use in performing arts. But the performing arts fellowship is building upon that to be even more specific and more specialized. Similar to my mentor experiences as a resident, you know, my skills and clinical reasoning and like pattern recognition, I feel like expanded even more as a fellow. I think just with any skill, you know, the more specialized you become, you kind of build upon. And so I don't necessarily know if it was really that much more, was that different as much as it was just building upon even more, you know what I mean? Emphasizing those important skills even more and just feeling, having more knowledge available.
Awesome. That's awesome. And I had a similar conversation with my student who was asking me about residency. And it's really cool to just see that fellowship is just, you know, that next step, that next tier. And if the structure of residency works really well for you, if that's something that you did and you really enjoyed, fellowship might be a good next step to continue that advancement. So, Monique, would you say overall fellowship was worth it for you?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. For me personally, I wouldn't want to do it any other way. Like I said, I had great experience as an orthopedic resident. So I feel like that was part of the success for that. But also similar to my experiences as a resident, I felt like having this structured program, I really was able to get a lot out of it in a short period of time. Like, you know, of course you could take didactic courses. You could, you know, be part of research projects. You could do presentations without doing a fellowship. But I think the amount that you can take away and having it crammed in like a year or a year and a half, you're the priority too, right? So as a resident, like you have your set times where, okay, you have your mentoring, your didactic, same thing for a fellowship, is your top priority. Your learning is really prioritized. So I feel like it just helps accelerate that process. Like, I feel like the experience that I took away in a year and a half of fellowship was almost equivalent to my 5 years of experience prior. So it just helps accelerate that, I guess, is the right word. And similar to what Laurel and Andrew were saying, for me, the most rewarding part is the mentorship. It's why I sought out fellowship. And I really think that that's just like a crucial, like she said, the heart of the, I love that the heart of like the program is the mentorship and building those clinical skills. And that's truly like how I feel about fellowship for me.
Excellent. Thank you for being so honest with your experiences. Because it's, as a resident, those were some things that I asked myself when thinking about fellowship. All right. Question for everybody. What are the employment opportunities for fellows after completing a fellowship program?
Well, the pattern seems to be that the institutions hosting the fellows tend to hire them afterwards. And I think our fellow has already gotten an offer to work at Westside Dance after this fellowship's over. So that may not extend into the long future, but it's a really good sign that the fellows had a successful completion when they get asked to be hired back by the institution. But what I want to say is that I know for many entry-level students who are pursuing performing arts experiences before getting their DPT, that's not guaranteed. Like those are highly coveted and hard to secure. And so you're not guaranteed to get any kind of clinical exposure to performing arts pre-graduating from a DPT program. So once you're out there in practice, like getting a job working with performing artists could be really, really hard if you don't have any experience whatsoever. So this may be the ticket for someone who's always had that love, maybe took a job just in a regular orthopedic practice, but really wants to develop a niche working with performing artists, maybe within an outpatient practice or in a place that, you know, specializes in working with performing arts that was just not available to them before doing the fellowship. So I think there are lots of opportunities once you've had this under your belt.
Yeah, and yeah. Real quick, I just want to plug the POSIG. Join as a student. That's what I did. And I got so many opportunities to open up within the performing arts community after joining that. So if you're a student listening to this, if you're a resident listening to this and you're interested in the performing arts and haven't yet had an opportunity and you're not sure if fellowship's right for you and that's why you're listening to this, start with just joining the POSIG and, you know, paying those dues and joining our events, because it is a wealth of information and there are a ton of clinicians who are very excited to work with you. Sorry, Andrea, go ahead.
No, I mean, it's free to join POSIG. It's under the Academy of Orthopedics, but yeah, I mean, it's really, as Laura was kind of saying, we're starting to retain, and that's kind of just the Johns Hopkins way, even with our orthopedic residents of, you know, we train to retain, but we're also very proud to have our residents and graduated fellows also go out in the community and kind of bring a part of them from residency and fellowship that has refined them and the professionalism that they've grown into to be able to take it in their next step and take what they've learned to then teach kind of the others that are out there that might not be well informed, but also just even the younger generation of PTs that are coming into play. But yeah, it was really hard when I was a PT student, you know, over 10 years ago, to get a clinical experience with a performing arts focus. And so that's where I did a lot of continuing education with Harkness. I did a lot of observing, you know, with Westside Dance. I did all of those components that led me into now, you know, 13 years of experience within this community, but also the performing arts community is so tight knit. So like once you are networking or meeting clinicians that have might be treating for a while or have been in this population, it's just then meeting others and the connections really, all the dots connect, and you might land a really cool opportunity through the people you meet, but also, you know, through fellowship and having the faculty and mentors and their connections as well.
Excellent. Thank you for that clarification. Circling back, we had previously talked a little bit about research, but I want to do a little bit deeper of a dive on what are the specific research opportunities or expectations And how is that structured throughout the fellowship itself?
So our fellow writes up a case study, but also we'll do the institutional review board modules for conducting research with human subjects. They start with developing a question and doing a literature review in the fall and using the literature to inform the methods for a question. And the scope really should be one that you feel you can accomplish in 1 year, because our fellowship is just 1 year. But there are opportunities, as Andrea said, to, you know, come up with your own question or collaborate with our dance research group. We also are doing research with some clinicians at Alvin Ailey's. So we have different opportunities for collaboration, but it's really led by the fellow in terms of what they want to get out of the research project. But in terms of the skills to develop the methodology, have it go through an IRB process, you know, piloting your methods and, you know, refining your methods, learning any kind of related skills, whether it be related to the outcome measures that you're using or red cap for data collection. And then, you know, using, you know, data processing, you know, software, SPSS and Excel to synthesize the information and figure out how to present it and organize it for presentation or publication. So there really is an arc from the very beginning of just basic skills. You don't have to come in with any research, but we're hoping that at the end, you've been able to take it from, you know, a question all the way to a finished product, even if it's a small scale product or something bigger that's done in collaboration with other researchers.
Yeah, ours is very similar in terms of, you know, structuring and going through the education with the IRB. It's kind of a goal in the first 90 days that the fellow completes the IRB training and initially starts with thinking about maybe what sort of, you know, research idea or picking up a research project that maybe the lit review was done, but now they're doing the eForm A. Monique might be able to talk to you a little bit more about kind of her research focuses that she did, you know, and our fellowship is 18 months and I built it to be 18 months knowing that the research side would take a little bit longer, but we take a fellow every 12 months. So there's almost, you know, that teamwork of transition of work or having, you know, the current fellow teaching the new fellow. That's kind of the intention of being able to really push out more research focus, but also, you know, even at an international level of presenting at CSM. So, you know, we invite the fellow to submit for abstract or submit for a case study through different kind of research articles. So it's just really trying to get them to have a dabble in research. And that could be anything, knowing that we're very clinical, it could be very clinical research, or is it more, you know, formalized experimental study that might take longer with all that data collection. We're really there to facilitate it. And we've worked with the School of Public Health where now we're doing a retrospective study and Monique and I are kind of working with a statistician. So giving us kind of good insight with that. So I'm always constantly learning as a clinician myself and the director and mentor, but our fellow and our other physical therapists in performing arts are learning as well. We're constant learners in the profession.
I love that. Oops. The constant learners in profession. Go ahead, Monique.
Yeah, I will add onto what Andrea had said. And for me, like going through the fellowship, the research opportunities that I had, I thought was really great going through the IRB process. And honestly, having an institution like Hopkins or, you know, Columbia, wherever you were doing your fellowship, it was really nice to have a program with a very established research department. It helped kind of go through those gray areas a little bit more in terms of like filling out an IRB, like as a new fellow, that was a little bit daunting to me at first, but having that guidance and kind of that framework to follow through was really, really helpful. And because of that structure, I was able to be part of multiple research projects. So I presented at PAMA, the Performing Arts Medical Association, last year, when it was a virtual conference on two different research initiatives that we had been doing at Hopkins. So having that framework, again, was really helpful to get more out of that experience.
That kind of already answered my next question for you, Monique, but I'm still going to ask it in case you wanted to expand a little bit more. What are the opportunities for professional growth with fellowships, and how have these opportunities allowed you to grow within the profession? Because it sounds like there was a lot of growth for you.
Yes, I will say that there definitely was a lot of growth for me personally. But on top of just the research, the didactic, and the presentation part of side of things, I also think a big part for me professionally was my ability to network. And like Andrea said, the performing arts is a kind of a tight-knit community. And I really felt like I was able to kind of immerse myself in that and become part of that, where before it was something I always wanted to be part of, but I kind of felt like I couldn't quite get through that barrier. And so I think for me, feeling like part of that performing arts team and that networking also led opportunities to continue to grow too. So as you know, I meet more medical professionals in the field, I'm able to expand upon that by collaborating with them for different initiatives. For example, right now I'm working with another performing arts physiatrist at HSS, potentially looking into doing research for dancers as a collaborative effort between Hopkins and that. So just being able to, I think, yeah, network and collaborate with other professionals is huge.
Awesome. And my secret hope is, not secret, I talk about it all the time, is that these programs will collaborate on research programs that the fellows from, you know, currently we have four, but even more as we grow fellowships, to do multi-center projects around performing arts care. We already have relationships with each other. This would be a great opportunity to collaborate. I know one of my colleagues is down at Hopkins right now for a different project, not related to performing arts. Like we all, you know, we work closely with Harkness. You know, so there's a lot that we share, and this is a great way for us to grow, not just around curriculum, but in research collaborations and teaching collaborations too. If anyone was at the recent CSM, you see that people from different parts of the country and from different institutions come together to do educational programming. This is another way that fellows can get engaged and collaborate with other PTs as well.
Two more other things I will add that I forgot to mention is that aside from the things I'd already mentioned, I was also able to help progress my abilities to mentor. So I was able to do mentoring workshops and help not only know how to learn as a mentee, but how I could then kind of pass the torch and be helpful in the future to serve as a mentor. And I think that was another big skill that I was appreciative of. And then finally, the last thing was, of course, this is happening at all the fellowships, but the access to backstage care, of course, that was a little bit tricky during COVID, but thankfully I was still able to have various opportunities to do so before things shut down. So I think having that kind of unique setting separate from just clinical treatment was really helpful as well.
That's actually part of the description of fellowship practice. Every performing arts fellowship needs to give the fellow an opportunity to work both in an outpatient setting and some sort of backstage experience, whatever that artist's backstage might look like. It could be Cirque du Soleil, it could be a Broadway show, it could be, you know, New York City Ballet, it could be, you know, but something other than the clinic setting.
Monique, how has fellowship changed your physical therapy practice with all of these great professional opportunities for growth?
Yeah, so I think that as we've kind of discussed, it really helped build upon my clinical skills. I think my ability for performing arts specific screening, like biomechanical evaluations, understanding common clinical patterns that happen specifically for the performing artists, I think were just enhanced. I had a better, I danced prior to my fellowship. I also played instrument and sang. So I had performing arts background, but I think I had a better understanding of the science side of things, of, okay, putting that in the practice of, okay, this is your experience, you know about performing arts, but then putting that clinical lens on top of that, and just getting a better understanding of how it all comes together. I also think that it helped me build a stronger rapport with my performing arts patients, because they obviously are going to have more respect for you, or they're going to feel more confident in your skills, I think, being an expert or, you know, having this additional training is something that, having finished fellowship, that I've had patients seek me out because, oh, I saw that you did this and this, and they now are interested in being treated by me. So I think it helped provide those skills, and it's nice to see that is also recognized by the community.
That's wonderful that your patients recognize all the hard work you've put in to best serve them. That's really beautiful that you get to hear that from your patients. All right, my last question. Laurel and Andrea, do you have any pearls of wisdom for potential fellowship applicants?
I think the biggest wisdom is, or misconception I should say, about performing arts fellowship is that you didn't have to be a professional performing artist to apply for this fellowship. I think a lot of student physical therapists see performing arts fellowship and they get a little bit intimidated that, like, oh, I didn't have this big professional career, I can't do that. It's really, if you have this passion and this motivation and this want to work with this population, whether you're a recreational, you know, musician, dancer, but you're really wanting to focus on, you know, providing care to this community, you know, I think looking at fellowship just to expand that knowledge is really going to be beneficial for someone that is kind of on the cusp of, like, do I do fellowship or not? And, you know, looking at, like, just because you were maybe a performing artist, kind of what Monique was saying, you have that knowledge, that insight, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you know all the ins and outs of, you know, taking care, and there's always ways to kind of increase your learning. And my other little pearl of wisdom is just, if you're looking at even residency, but even with fellowship, of knowing your learning style, right? And going into these programs with an understanding of the best way that you learn, because it's going to make the program and the process even more invaluable to you to be able to get every ounce out of the curriculum and out of the mentorship that you're seeking out. So kind of two little twists there, but those are my pearls.
I love Andrea's pearls. I agree with both of those pearls. Yes, all are welcome. You do not have to have been a professional performer to be a physical therapist treating performing artists. And this absolutely could be your path to that area of specialty. The pearl that I'm thinking of now, though, is the recognition that when you get to fellowship level education, you're not a novice clinician. We recognize that you already have experience as a PT. You've already either done a residency or sat for your, you know, clinical specialty exam. You have expertise, you know, own that, come with that, recognize that you are a competent, you know, an experienced clinician. And this is your chance to get more, right? And so know what you want to get out of the fellowship. Although we have a structured curriculum and have, you know, foundations in the description of fellowship practice, there are ways for you to kind of guide your learning towards your particular area of interest. So whether that be through the question that you ask in your research, or you know, the articles that you choose to present for journal club, like you can take the twists towards, you know, places that you really want to learn more about. You can come prepared with things you've seen or heard about, maybe at a workshop or at a conference, and that you'd want to learn more, you know, about from your mentor. Like, come with questions, come eager to grow in specific ways. And and not just wait to be told, you know, what should I know? What should I learn? You know, we'll give you plenty, but come with your own questions and your own confidence in what you're bringing to the table from the very beginning.
Yeah, it's kind of what I mentioned before. It's not necessarily, you know, create your own fellowship, but it really is a, we can help really make it specific to the fellow depending on what their interest is and maybe where they eventually want to go with it, you know, as Laura was saying. So it can be as guided and structured, but it's going to be even more valuable to the fellow with their own interest that they bring to the table and, you know, bringing it to the faculty and the director to be able to facilitate what the fellow needs.
Absolutely.
Excellent pearls of wisdom. I feel like I've learned a lot and hopefully our listeners have as well regarding fellowships for Columbia West Side Dances and Johns Hopkins. So thank you all for being on this episode of the podcast, and thanks for joining me for part two of our special edition, PAPT Fellowships, What's in the Box? We'll catch you next time. Have a good night.
Thank you for listening to PASIG Practice Pearls, created by the Performing Arts Special Interest Group of the APTA Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy.